Welcome to Legacy Fundraising Chat, where we talk about everything legacy related to help you as a fundraiser generate more interest amongst your supporters in legacy giving. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, founder of Persuasion and legacy marketer, providing consultancy, training, coaching and interim legacy support to small to medium-sized charities. I'm delighted that the National Free Wills Network is sponsoring my podcast. They allow you to offer your supporters a free solicitor written will anywhere in the UK, and the charity receives full measurable results. With 15 years of experience and over 500 million raised in future income for charities, the network can help charities of all shapes and sizes launch and maximise their legacy programmes. To find out more, visit nationalfreewills.net. Hello, listener. Welcome to episode 55 and the final part of my interview with Ben from QTS and Rose from Eden Project. Did you know that I have a monthly e-newsletter where I share even more tips on how to elevate your legacy program? You can subscribe by heading over to my website, persuasion.org.uk, and go to the contact page, or you can drop me an email at sunita@persuasion.org.uk. Back to the episode.
We absolutely loved working on the campaign. It is about finding the right team for the right campaign. And I just wanted to touch on something that you said about finding out who your supporters are. So Ben, I'm just going to ask you, in campaigns, we're often asking callers to explore motivations. Why do you think this is so important in a legacy call?
Exploring motivations just means that we can get beneath the bonnet a bit and have a conversation with a person, find out really what they want their lasting gift to be, what that might look like to them. We're just trying to get to know that, very much a conversation. And it's very different to other kinds of telephone fundraising, because it's a campaign where we're not really looking for a result. We're more looking to go on a journey with somebody and to find out where they're currently at in that journey, and maybe for them to just start their own internal dialect about that and what that might look like. So that's the sort of thing, is we're maybe starting lighting a candle, an idea, and letting people go away and maybe think about that. And so that first point of conversation is really important, and it's really important that the person feels that. And then we want to touch back with that person for many more years to come. And I think that's one of the things that maybe is you can see more of, is that sort of, it's not many other campaigns where you've done it once, you've done it. You've got it. You really have to keep on contacting people and developing that relationship and moving it forward. Now, there's a lot in that.
I really like that. Have a conversation with a person. And when we often use the term supporters and donors, but I suppose when we really break it down, it's an individual just like us that has feelings, emotions, and thoughts. And touching into that and stepping into, what do they actually feel and think about this organization? But I guess until you find out where this person is at, it feels a little bit premature. Go back to the dating. It's almost asking someone to marry you without you actually finding out, do they even like you?
Yeah, it's so true.
Will they even say yes, I guess, is the thing. Because you really want to be sure, don't you, before you go in for that.
I was just going to say that in the motivation for support, that information is also incredibly helpful beyond legacy fundraising. So it was something we were able to dig a bit deeper into in our most recent campaign, finding out what prompted people to first support Eden. And we were able to, the callers help, obviously everyone's story really varied, but we were broadly speaking able to put people into one of three categories, where they were either driven by the benefits of membership, they were keen to support our mission, or maybe they'd been given membership as a gift and weren't super engaged. And all of that's really helpful, because it's impossible for us to communicate individually with all of our supporters and members. We have a very small team, but we would like to communicate more intelligently with people rather than just do mass comms that one size fits all, because we know that people have very different experiences and perspectives and motivations for supporting. So being able to gather that information is a step on the journey for us to be able to do more of that carefully curated, segmented communications, where we can start to develop that more personal relationship with our supporters, but in a way that we can actually achieve.
Just think thinking about the motivations on this campaign, it felt to me there were two very distinct audiences. So you had these supporters that were deeply connected to Eden Project and actually had seen it grow from nothing. And those were the people that revealed themselves as pledgers and were also thinking about including the charity in their will. And it was just their personal circumstances that had meant they hadn't done that. And then it seemed that there were a cohort of members who were visiting the site and enjoyed all the benefits of being a member and seeing all the changes, the seasonal changes at Eden Project, but maybe hadn't had that emotional connection, but definitely saw it as an important part of the climate change emergency, but hadn't necessarily connected it with themselves. And I suppose with that information, Rose, there is something you can do with those cohort of people. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Being able to meet people where they are and find that motivation for wanting to support us, it's just essential, I think, because we are, Eden, I would say, is quite a complex organisation. We do so much, a lot of which is visible, but so much of which is invisible, that we really have to actively and proactively tell people what we're doing behind the scenes. And knowing that there are still quite a large proportion of our supporters who only really engage with the visitor destination shows us that there's work to be done for us in some respects, but also, again, meet them where they are and tell them about how their support can help the physical destination. And that's when I think stories like the Cloud Bridge being able to be created through a legacy gift, that's very attractive to that group of people who do have so many memories tied up in the physical place that they have been to. And we know that we mean an awful lot to people. We represent beautiful memories, lovely summers in Cornwall. There's so many things that we are. So having that understanding of motivation is only helpful for us, I think.
And I guess you can decide in terms of which cohort of people do you want to give the legacy message to, because legacies isn't necessarily appropriate for all supporters. So it might be if they're not just young in age, but if they're young in terms of their journey with you and to the organisation, and you've already mentioned you're quite a young organisation, maybe now isn't even the time to have those conversations with those people, but focus on those people that have been there from the very beginning, of which there are obviously very many. And so, Rose, do you have the results of the two campaigns you can share with my listener?
I do.
Oh, exciting. Like, we need a bit of a drum roll here.
So in 2022, we achieved 69 inquirers, so people who we sent out follow-up information to via letter or email with our legacy brochure, and we uncovered 4 pledgers who had, like I said, they previously left a gift in their will to us, but we just didn't know. And I believe that was from about 500 phone calls. So with our more refined approach, we contacted fewer people, so we did 400 calls, and we generated 101 legacy inquirers, so new legacy inquirers, and found 3 new legacy pledgers. So we're really pleased with those results. They were both either on target or higher than target. And in terms of the, obviously it's wonderful to uncover someone who's already pledged to leave a gift in their world. That gives us an opportunity to thank them and make sure we're developing that relationship with them appropriately. But the new legacy inquirers, that's really exciting for us, because that's, we're on the start of that new dating relationship with them. And we've got lots that we can talk to them about. So we're hoping to invite some of them to an event later this year. We can talk to them in person and, like I said, just develop that a little bit further beyond the phone call.
And I don't want to attribute that solely to QTS and myself. I think that there is a pat on the back for yourselves, because the supporters have to feel something. They have to be cherished, nurtured, to be even thinking about supporting the organisation information in their will. So the fact that there is growth there within a year and a substantial growth in legacy inquirers does say that they are receiving the right messages and understanding that you're not just a visitor attraction. Well done there for putting quarters first and doing whatever you did to enable us to get those results for you.
Oh, thank you. I think it is all about that relationship building and fundraising and knowing that everything we're doing, every communication we have is part of that. And we absolutely appreciate that people's loved ones comes first and that some charities do just mean so much to people and we don't want to fight for their attention, but we would just like to be that gift of hope that people would want to make in their world.
Definitely. So Ben, why do you think legacy campaigns are, from what I can see, becoming more and more successful?
I think it's the nature of the telephone has changed and the way the telephone's being used. So I think because of changes and updates to the GDPR, it actually did work in our favour. And the reason why it worked in our favour is because now the only time you hear from an organisation, a charity or company, is because you've generally got a relationship with them. You've opted to hear from them. And so what that means is that we are all generally not getting so many cold calls anymore. So what we're finding, yes, is that when we phone people on really all of our campaigns, generally when people answer, they're normally really quite happy to hear from us. And they just respond really well to the phone. I think that's the first part of it, is just the fact that people are more willing to chat on the phone, and because they're not being hassled all the time with calls that they didn't want to get. So we're finding the way that people respond on the phone has changed. I also think just the ability to have a conversation with someone like we're doing now, it's fundraising perspective. It's still like one of the best methods to get across a complicated message and to be able to hear someone instead of just a lot of direct marketing, whether it be via email or post, SMS, is all about what an organization is saying to us, to a person. Whereas when you're phoning somebody, you're giving them a platform for them to talk about what they want and to hear their voice. And so I think from that perspective, it just goes down really well, especially when we're talking about big, important topics, how a person wants their lasting gift to be and how they want to make their mark in this world. I think that's probably why it really is so effective, is just that ability to be heard. And in an ideal world, you would go around and speak to every single person that supports Eden, but you can't do that. So the next best thing is to phone them and have a nice conversation to them when it's right for them.
And that's a really good point about it is quite a complicated message in terms of what message do you go with? Do you go with the free wills offer? Do you go with your family comes first? Do you go with inheritance tax? Do you go with the other benefits of leaving a legacy, whether that be to the donor or the charity? But I suppose with the telephone, it enables the caller to tailor that what is a complicated message into a very simple conversation.
You're right. It's like you're partly supporting, guiding, aren't you? That should be the way. A lot of what we find is a lot of legacy telephone fundraising is about people wanting to understand how to do it and what methods they need. How do I do this? And what are my options? And I'd really like to do it, but I don't know how. And a lot of it is around that. And I think it just gives it the perfect opportunity to, the classic you get is, I've been meaning to sort that out for a while. Oh, it's great that you phoned. Oh, I've had that on my to-do list forever. And like you said, Sunita, the Union Project, Rose, your team, you're doing that heavy lifting about the relationship. So when we phone up, we can't determine how they're going to feel about Eden. It's not if we phone up and we say, it's the Eden Project, and they're not very happy to hear from us. There's not a lot we can do about that. Mm-hmm. But if we phone up and there's a relationship there, and, yes, it's Eden Project. Fantastic. Yeah. And then you have a lovely chat with them. Those two things work really well together. And then the direct marketing aspect of it can all come together in that kind of halo marketing sense.
And that is so true, isn't it? Often we're just calling about the thing that they've been thinking about, because the stats, the most recent stats, are something around 54% of adults do not have a will yet. Shocking, really, when you think about how many will services there are. And something around 30% of wills are actually out of date. So I think that probably people are aware that their will is out of date because it doesn't reflect their final wishes and they want to redistribute their estate. So often when we're calling people, we do get that, don't we, in terms of, oh gosh, I do need to update my will. And what perfect time then to ring your supporters is when they're thinking about it. Was there anything that surprised you about the campaigns, in particular the last campaign that we ran? Because I wasn't there for the first one.
Nothing surprised me in a bad way or anything like that. But I think beyond the feedback about people's relationships or things we can improve or what they would like from us, I just really love listening to the calls where you hear people's stories. And I think I've always been very interested in people, like to hear where they've come from and all of that. And for the, like you said, the people who have supported Eden from the very, very early days, they've got such fond memories and often quite funny stories about how they first came across Eden. And so that's not really a surprise, but it's an added perk of doing the campaigns that I get to listen in on some of these stories. And it just helps why I'm doing what I'm doing. It helps inspire me, because often you hear from people when there's a problem or there's a bit of admin, and you don't often get the lovely stories, the really nice positive feedback, the reminder of how much Eden means to people. And I really just love hearing those.
We certainly love listening to those as well. It's definitely the highlight of running the campaigns, and obviously working with yourself, Rose. So we're planning on running another campaign later this year. Have you got any particular hopes for this campaign?
So it's all about building on the success of the previous 2 years, maintaining momentum. I'm keen to reach people that we've not been able to reach over the previous 2 years. Also follow up with people who have inquired for information. There's nothing I want to do dramatically different. I feel like we've got lovely approach that people are very warm and receptive to, and so I don't want to change too much about that. My concern would be that when you stop doing this sort of activity, if you leave it for a couple of years, and then it's just, you have to start again, don't you? So I just want it to be a nice gentle momentum building.
It's lovely that you want the campaign to be very similar to how it was run before. And the Ben and I are very ambitious, and we're always looking to improve campaigns and we do have high aspirations for making things so much better. Ben, do you want to talk about what we're doing with the team to ensure that the campaigns are better and always getting more results for charities?
We realise that legacy telephone fundraising is a complicated area to work in, especially for all of us, really, but for us to all really have a deep understanding of that is really important. What we are focusing on as an agency is making sure that our fundraisers have now additional training around legacy fundraising. We obviously provide them training, but we're going really in depth now. So we're spending a lot more time focusing on that and just having dedicated teams working on legacy, really understanding it deeply, understanding the motivations, how to really deep, meaningful conversations with people, also understanding the mechanisms of how to leave gifts in wills and all those different things, so that they're not going to be necessarily advising, but they're going to be able to understand it. And I think that's really important. And I think, like Rose is saying, going back and revisiting these campaigns, that's what's really critical. If we want to develop the gifts in wills and for people to feel really happy with the decisions they're making, and those decisions are really real and not just for the sake of getting us off the phone or something like that, then we really need our fundraisers to be really at their best and having those really meaningful conversations with people.
And that consistency is really key, because it does take time to get to know an organisation. And just building on year really enables the callers to really get themselves immersed in that charity, and also for us to really make that impact that, because things evolve and things change and we need to be in it. And like I have visited the Eden Project and I will be visiting again, and it's practically on Ben's doorstep. Not just emotional connection, but that geographical connection. And I think with Eden being based in Cornwall and QTS Callers being based in Cornwall really does make an impact, because that they know what they're talking about, which I think is relevant as well.
And I think that's a lot of what we're doing behind the scenes, is making sure that the fundraisers, the principles align with the organisations that we're working with and the charities that we're supporting, because that's really important. They've got to feel really passionate about the work that they're doing, otherwise it just doesn't work. And so those personal connections as well can really be powerful, because as humans we really pick up on that.
Yeah, and we definitely, not that I've tested it, but I feel pretty confident we wouldn't get the same results and the same response if we were using a call centre type approach with people who weren't really aware of what Eden was, or that the ability to have those really nice, quiet, personal phone calls with people who are also from the Southwest who also know about Eden it really does help make the difference. And I said before, they're like an extension of our team, and I think that also helped with the higher ups at Eden, their comfort at doing this type of activity. It's just definitely, it really, all of that feeds into them going, okay, yeah, this is a good decision, this is, we want to stand behind this type of activity. So yeah, we're very lucky to have that geographic connection.
So true.
And I totally agree, Rose, you don't need to test the theory with a call center.
I won't, don't worry.
I think that one we can safely say is definitely not a goer. So Rose, what piece of advice would you give my listener that was thinking about calling their donors, whether it's in-house or even outsourcing?
In regards to legacy fundraising, I think my original assumptions of legacy giving may have been slightly skewed by the two organisations that I'd worked with prior to Eden. So the RNIB and Q, where their donor profile was generally speaking, although obviously there are outliers, but generally speaking, an older, wealthier demographic. And I think that definitely fed into my view that people who leave legacy gifts are older and wealthier, and also that people who have wills are older and wealthier. And I think what I've learned is through the fact that my initial remit at Eden was to expand our audience of supporters and members beyond the local, retired, but incredibly loyal population. They are an amazing group who've stood behind our vision since day one, but they didn't necessarily reflect our visitor profile, which was lots of people visiting from outside of the county, lots of younger families. So whilst we've been making good strides recruiting younger families as members, and particularly those living outside of Devon and Cornwall, as that shift has changed, my views have also changed from that earlier belief that everyone really does need a will. I'm still so shocked that it's only 54% of people. I do feel like you want to be clear about what your wishes are, that it's for everyone. You don't necessarily need to have a country estate or lots of asset. It's just your place to put your final wishes across. So that's translated into our legacy marketing at Eden. We use really inclusive language and imagery. And I've said before, we drip feed legacy messaging across a range of channels. So emails, magazine ads, renewal communications. And I guess we're trying to normalize the concept of legacy giving, that writing a will is for everybody, that all gifts, whatever the size, make a difference to our mission. If, like me, you have assumptions about who your supporters are and who might be most receptive to it, I would encourage you to use the telephone to test those assumptions, because even if you don't get a positive response on the phone to your ask and they don't inquire and find out more, you can definitely use it as an opportunity to collect feedback and insight that might help inform your approach for the future or other areas of your work. And yeah, I think just test. It sounds really trite, but test and learn, test again. And using the phone is just so brilliant for doing that, because you get such meaningful insight beyond open rates and click through and page views and dwell time. You get instant responses from people, and that's just invaluable.
And I have to say this, it translates to real life, doesn't it? If you want to know what someone's thinking, just ask them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really quite simple when we think about it.
And you get such more detailed responses than you would in a survey, and it helps really build a picture beyond some graphs. And surveys definitely have their place. I'm not saying don't do them, but if you really want to get to know your supporters better, you do need to talk to them. And it's not always possible to do that in-house. You might have the ability to, and great, you can test stuff in-house. But the benefit of outsourcing, I suppose, for a team like mine, where we are covering lots of different revenue streams, we don't have a legacy specialist in-house. We've got me and my colleague Laura, who, that's part of our role. If you don't have that expertise, you should pay for it, invest in it, because it is worth its weight in gold.
That's lovely. So Ben, I'm going to ask you the same question. What piece of advice would you give my listener that's thinking about calling their donors, whether it's in-house or outsourcing?
I would say the same as Rose. I think it's just definitely just try it. Testing is the answer to this. And what I find is that normally from a test, that first campaign is then what sparks this. So the first campaign is always, it can be a bit challenging to get set up and to negotiate with the powers that be. But once it's in place and proven that it actually works, then you really open up the doors to some really great potential. Test and just make a start, because I think I find more and more when people get into this and they do it, they're always just so pleased with the results.
Amazing. Thank you, Rose and Ben, for coming on the show. It's been so lovely chatting. We've managed to whiz away an hour quickly. I'm sure we can continue, but we've all got jobs to do, haven't we? Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure working with you both. And I look forward to working with you on the next campaign, Rose.
Yes, definitely. Me too.
Yeah, thanks, Anita. Thanks, Rose.
Thank you.
Listener, how did you find that? As always, I have some key takeaways for you. Number one, whether you do this in-house or have some budget to outsource the telephone, is a powerful tool for finding out where your donors are in their legacy journey, as well as providing useful stories and motivations to help you in your legacy marketing. Number two, worried if it will go well? I suggest doing a test in this area. We know that if we want a different result, we have to do something differently. And finally, if you start using the telephone, keep up the momentum. As your donors get more familiar with you using the phone, they are likely to share more with you in this way. Have you got any questions? Please do email me at sunita@persuasion.org.uk. I'm always happy to help. Until next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Legacy Fundraising Chat, brought to you by Persuasion, a consultancy training and coaching organisation helping fundraisers just like you. Thank you also for everything that you do for your cause in the charity sector, making it an inspiring place to work. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, championing your legacy fundraising efforts.